Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber. On today's show, social media and elections. The whole Russia meddled in the 2016 election story, that's not news. But recently, there have been calls for stricter regulation of platforms like Facebook and Twitter amid revelations that Russians were buying advertising on those platforms. Senators like James Lankford of Oklahoma and Mark Warner of Virginia have been really hitting these platforms hard because the operatives from Russia were able to purchase advertising. Even James Lankford said that Russia is stoking divisions over the NFL and the national anthem and the protests we've been seeing, buying advertisement that makes arguments on both sides. Earlier this month, Facebook acknowledged hundreds of fake accounts, probably from Russia, that spent $100,000 on ads, trying to stoke divisive issues like gun control and race relations during the 2016 elections. Is it time to regulate these platforms, or could there be unintended consequences for free speech rights, particularly those of Americans? Joining me to discuss this is a friend of the show. He's been on here twice before talking about digital free speech, Federal Elections Commissioner Lee Goodman. Commissioner, thanks for coming back.
Evan, thanks for having me back.
Yes, I wish it was I wish it wasn't such a unfortunate circumstance that brought you back on the show, but it's a good topic, and I'm glad to have you because few people are better to discuss this with. So, given all that's gone on, right, with the Russian meddling, purchasing advertising, trying to divide us as a country, is it time for your commission to regulate these companies the same way that you regulate, television advertising, radio advertising, direct mail?
Well, Evan, let's start with what the law currently provides with respect to foreign expenditures to influence the outcome of U.S. elections. The law for decades, and it's on the books today, is that foreign nationals are prohibited from making expenditures or contributions in connection with U.S. elections. And going further, there is another law beyond my jurisdiction called the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which is enforced by the Department of Justice. And the Foreign Agents Registration Act embodies Congress's determination that foreign nationals are permitted to speak about public policy in the United States under a regulatory regime that, among other things, requires them to post disclaimers on all of their informational materials. And that would include online ads, television, radio ads. You see these a lot on the Sunday morning news programs, messages sponsored by Qatar. Or you can buy at a lot of boxes here in the Washington, D.C. area, you can buy China Daily, a news print. A newsprint that is sponsored by a foreign entity in China. And all of those carry a disclaimer saying that they are sponsored by the foreign speaker. Now, when the foreign speaker crosses over the line to actually advocate the election or defeat of U.S. candidates or tries to spend money, we had this in 1996, for example, with Chinese nationals funneling money into the Democratic National Committee. All of that is already illegal. So my concern is that we overreact to recent news reports about a few Facebook ads and begins regulating all American citizens' free speech rights online to get at what is already illegal. And I think we have the Mr. Mueller and the Department of Justice and the FEC already have tools on the table to regulate and punish ads that may have expressly advocated the election or defeat of candidates in the United States.
So is that the distinction here? It's that while it might not be illegal for a Russian operative to just buy an ad trolling someone who's commenting on the NFL or just trying to get a rise out of people, is the distinction that if they went so far as to say, I'm a Russian operative, I'm buying an ad to say vote for Donald Trump or vote for Hillary Clinton, that's what's illegal?
That's clearly illegal.
But now, what kind of recourse would you have, right? Like, we're talking about the public internet. People could be in Moscow. The platform is automated in a lot of ways, right? You can just go online and buy ads. They're not necessarily in the moment blocking you from doing that. Now, of course, Facebook is doing things now to try to clean this up. And I want to make it clear that the company's not just turning a blind eye to it. And Mark Zuckerberg has come out and say, look, I did downplay this after November, but I am taking this seriously. That all said, how do you stop someone from doing this. And even if it's illegal on U.S. soil, what are you going to do about someone in Moscow spending $100,000 on ads?
Well, I think you've hit the nub of the problem, Evan. And let me put this in some context. My primary concern is that we not overreact to things that we cannot control and out of frustration start regulating American citizens and make them guilty or responsible or punish them for what some bad actors do abroad. And so let's put this in some context. It is called the World Wide Web for a reason, right? The internet is a unique medium in part because it defies old historical geographic boundaries. And there is information as close as a click on your computer from around the world about all subjects, including much foreign commentary and opinion and information about U.S. politics and U.S. candidates. And it would be very difficult for the U.S. government to enforce our laws against a foreign person sitting on foreign soil, posting information about U.S. politics on a foreign computer and a foreign server. That's very difficult. Now, out of frustration, we shouldn't start regulating and punishing American citizens in their use of the internet because there's a lot of social good in the United States from that use. That's point one. Point two, in keeping this in context, and the reason I provide the context is not to downplay foreign meddling in our politics, but to add context to prescriptive proposals on what we're going to do about it, and that we not overreact and diminish the First Amendment and free speech rights of, and other civil liberties of American citizens on the internet, is this. Recent news reports are that there may have been $100,000 to $150,000 in ads spent by foreign sources on a range of subjects, some of which may not be within the Federal Election Commission's jurisdiction, but might be in the under the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice on the Foreign Agents Registration Act. But those ads are a drop in the ocean of information available from foreign sources on the World Wide Web. So if you use a broadcast antenna on your television at home, you can pick up news from Vietnamese news channels, Japanese, French, the BBC. So we have all sorts of foreign information available to us about U.S. politics generally. There are numerous foreign publications at your local newsstand, from China Daily to the Financial Times. So, and then on the internet, let's just look at a couple of examples from 2016, since everybody is focused on some alleged Facebook ads in connection with the 2016 election. Vicente Fox in Mexico.
Former president, right?
Former president of Mexico said he was going to encourage and try to influence Mexican Americans to vote for one candidate and against the other candidate in the presidential
election. Right, because one candidate wanted to build a wall and one didn't.
And he tweeted out hundreds of tweets using the Twitter platform and said he had discussions with Nancy Pelosi about his efforts. Also, one candidate, it happened to be Hillary Clinton, this isn't a partisan observation, but said that she was recruiting endorsements from foreign leaders in order to demonstrate that she would be a better commander-in-chief than Donald Trump. With the click of your mouse, you can find commentary from foreign leaders endorsing Hillary Clinton. And with the click of a mouse, from, for example, Les Echos is a French publication. And it published Francois Hollande's endorsement of Hillary Clinton and why Hillary Clinton would be a better president for the United States than Donald Trump. And with the click of a mouse, an American citizen can gain access to that and translate it from French to English.
So you make a compelling case that there is a lot of information out there. I mean, one of your former colleagues who's been very critical of you and your contingent of, you know, I would say that you're advocating free speech. But Ann Rival, former chairman, you've also served as chairman of the Federal Elections Commission. She penned an op-ed in Politico with the headline, "How the FEC Turned a Blind Eye to Foreign Meddling," and with also the subhead, "For years, my fellow FEC commissioners," you, "refused to apply campaign finance rules to the internet. Now Russia's running amok on Facebook." She would argue, and you did bring up the internet, but she would argue that, look, the difference between going to a newsstand and buying China Daily or turning your channel to Russian Today is that that requires a proactive action on the consumer's part. And she would say that the micro-targeting and how cheap it is, $100,000 may sound very cheap, but you can do a lot with $100,000. You know, Tech Freedom has sometimes promoted some things on social media. You can throw $5 at something and micro-target. But she proposed some policies. She said, look, and this is a quote from the op-ed, "to prevent another attack and to provide voters with information about who is behind efforts to sway their votes, we should adopt policies mandating the disclosure of the source of advertisements." I mean, is that so bad? I mean, would that really restrict the free speech rights of Americans?
Well, it can in certain circumstances, but let's go back to some basic premises, because I read former Commissioner Ravel's opinion in the Politico piece about a week and a half ago.
Right.
And let me start by critiquing that opinion piece. There was revisionist history in that piece, and that's an important jumping off point from her proposals. She said that she proposed greater disclosure of online political content. Well, I want to be clear on what where our disagreements were at that time. Our fundamental disagreement was that Commissioner Ravel wanted to regulate American citizens' free posts on social media platforms. So, for example, an organization posted a video about politics and encouraging people to vote one way or the other in a Senate election on YouTube, and there was zero expenditure to disseminate that YouTube video. If it goes viral, it goes viral.
Right.
But that's a populist a phenomenon where people are sharing a video around.
Yeah, sometimes you don't have to pay to get, you know,
exactly,
a lot of people to look at something.
And where Commissioner Ravel was going just three or four years ago was to require anybody who posts that type of political content on YouTube or on Facebook or wherever they post it for free, she wanted to require them to post disclaimers on that ad and file reports with the Federal Election Commission within 48 hours of posting their free online content. And so we weren't talking at all about foreign citizens or paid ads at the commission when we had disagreements with Commissioner Ravel. Now, as for her proposal now, she's recasting a new proposal, which is to begin treating the social media platforms like public utilities. That somehow they be responsible for policing the content and source of advertising on their platforms. And let me begin by observing that I know of no principled distinction between Facebook.com and an ad posted there versus an ad posted on the NewYorkTimes.com. Online, they are all platforms for paid advertising. And if we it would countermand over three decades of law at the commission to begin holding the advertising platforms themselves responsible for a violation of the Federal Election Campaign Act. It would also countermand the Foreign Agents Registration Act to hold the Washington Post accountable if it includes in its newspaper an insert for China Daily, and they do this, and that China Daily insert doesn't carry the FARA disclaimer saying that it was paid for and sponsored by the foreign entity. And so I do not believe that you can draw a distinction between Facebook.com or the NewYorkTimes.com or anyone else if you begin imposing the legal accountability, and that would lead to punishment if people fail, for policing the source and content of every ad. And it would put the advertising company, whether it's NewYorkTimes.com or Facebook.com, in the position of determining and analyzing the content of each ad it places and the true source of each ad sponsor. And that is an incredible regulatory burden. And it would also require a change in statute. We don't have the regulatory authority to do that where we sit today because the Federal Election Campaign Act assigns responsibility on the spender, on the sponsor of the ad, not the company that sells ad space.
And we're recording this on Friday, September 29th, just for context, and some of the criticism of Twitter from Senator Warner that was at a hearing yesterday, the 28th. Now, I think one distinction that critics of these platforms might say is, look, the difference between the New York Times and Facebook is influence. It's value. It's not necessarily that they're saying there's a legal distinction or that it's easy to write a law to distinguish them, but they're going to say, look, posting some banner ad on New York Times, you have data to show that that's not very effective. Maybe it gets a 0.02% click rate or something, but that the effectiveness of advertising on social media is much higher. So that might be the distinction. Now, I don't know what the role of government here is, but clearly, I mean, your former colleague Ann Ravel would argue 75% of Americans support, you know, more disclosure, whatever that means. Senators are up in arms over this. People are anxious about the idea that a foreign government could stoke divisions in our society. And while it might be entirely someone's own fault if they fall for something like Hillary Clinton's running a child sex ring out of a pizzeria in D.C., right? That might say more about our public education system and our mental health system than anything else. But is it not concerning that we have foreign governments doing this? And people do look to government for solutions. They look to your agency. What kinds of policies could be put in place, or what do you think the role of government should be? Or is the answer just everyone needs to calm down? It's a drop in the bucket.
Well, first, let me counsel caution. Let's not overreact. And that's why I'm providing you the context of how much foreign speech there is out there available to American citizens.
Russia Today is a channel on your cable, right?
It is. And Russia Today probably carried some of the same commentary that Facebook that may have appeared on Facebook.
Right.
Okay. So first, let's be very careful. And what I'm saying is, listen, I'm not sympathetic to foreign meddling or influence in our elections. I'm just saying that it is ubiquitous. Okay. And so let's not go attacking the free speech rights of American citizens first as an effort to get to capillaries of foreign speech. Let's target foreign speakers in whatever we do, and let's not at first target the civil liberties of American citizens. You know, we had this debate not long ago with adoption of the Patriot Act, and it was my friends on the left that complained that we would overreact in the Patriot Act to diminish the civil liberties of American citizens to get at. And we weren't just talking about speech and ideas at that point.
We were talking about terrorism.
We were talking about terrorism. And just to provide further historical context, I mean, look back at the 1950s and look at the attacks on the civil liberties and the First Amendment freedoms of association that accompanied the Red Scare and McCarthyism.
Right.
Okay? Look back at 1789, and the Federalist government's concern over the influence of French Jacobins in the United States politics. And so what did they do? They outlawed American citizen speech to criticize the government, and they also diminished the rights of new people coming to America, immigrants, and their ability to vote because they were deemed supportive of the Republican-Democrat Party of Thomas Jefferson. So we have a long history of overreaction and diminishing the civil liberties of American citizens in order to get at some of the pores that may be open for foreign influence. I say let's look for the pores. Okay,
now, and how do you do that?
Well, let's start with this. Currently, if you publish an online ad, whether you're an American citizen or technically a foreign citizen, your ad expressly advocating the election or defeat of candidates is already required to carry a disclaimer. Now, if it's a paid ad.
Right.
Now, what I hear are proposals to expand that disclaimer requirement to free posts online, like YouTube videos that are posted and disseminated for free. And the second area where we have disagreed, second area of expansion that I'm hearing discussed is, well, let's cover all political speech, okay? Well, that political speech by foreign nationals already is subject to the disclaimer requirement of the Foreign Agents Registration Act. I think that if there are people who want to cheat that disclaimer rule, they will do so.
Is this a resources question then? So I think you make a compelling case that there's already laws on the books, yet people are still saying, why the hell are they getting away with this stuff? Is this a resources question? Maybe if the message to Congress is not restrict the free speech rights of Americans, but if, as we acknowledge that a Facebook, a company with a $500 billion value and billions of users, it would be unreasonable to expect that they can just completely filter everything and clean everything up and make sure that Russians are not allowed to speak about U.S. politics, which has, you know, global free speech considerations too. Could government help with monitoring? Could the DOJ just be given more money for this? I mean, what kind of things could be done without necessarily changing the law, which you make a compelling case why changing the law is an overreaction, but what could be done under our existing regime to address the legitimate concerns from senators like Warner about foreign speech?
Yes, well, the Department of Justice could take a more aggressive position on enforcing the Foreign Agents Registration Act, subject to the practical and obvious limits of the example we discussed earlier, which is how do they go after and enforce and punish a foreign citizen or foreign group that does all of this overseas.
Yeah.
Okay. And it seems to me, out of frustration, the rush is to force Google and Facebook and Twitter and the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Any
advertising platform, and make them legally responsible for investigating who is sponsoring content. And by the way, I do not believe these proposals will stop at paid advertising.
Right.
I do believe they will, because someone will see a loophole, which is free posts on these platforms.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, Twitter will be violating the law by allowing Vicente Fox to tweet, to use the platform to influence U.S. elections. And so I don't think we're going to just stop there. But yes, Department of Justice, I think I read recently that the Department of Justice is becoming more aggressive with Russia Today, with RT, excuse me, demanding that Russia Today register as a foreign agent and post its disclaimers on all of its publications in the United States. So that is one tool on the table to enhance the disclaimer requirements already on the law under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Now, here is the most difficult issue we face right now under current law, save expansions of the law to issue speech or a change in the law to make advertising platforms legally responsible to police this, subject to punishment by their government. And that is the small items exemption that we have to the disclaimer requirement at the Federal Election Commission. So, we have a small items exemption. Historically, it applied to physical things like the button you're wearing on your lapel. So campaign buttons.
It says tech freedom in case anyone's wondering. It's not a Russian flag.
Campaign buttons were exempt from the disclaimer requirement.
Right.
Pens and pencils that campaigns might give out. Bumper stickers. And the idea was that those small items are impractical and don't have sufficient space to post the required disclaimer, which says paid for by XYZ political organization, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee, and then post the World Wide Web address or street address for XYZ political organization. Now, that's a lot of information in it to have to include on a small item. And so the commission has had in its law for 40 years a small items exemption that says you don't have to have a disclaimer, where the disclaimer would crowd out any room for the speech or message itself.
It's very burdensome for small players. Maybe grassroots organizations would not have come to be and really succeeded in what they do, whether it's on the left or the right, if everything they did on Facebook required all these burdensome reporting.
But here's where the rub came with new technologies. What about very small advertisements on small screens, such as your iPhone?
Yeah.
So we had a group before us a couple of years ago called – a Revolution Messaging, which is a vendor to liberal organizations, and they're a master at online and iPhone advertising. And one of the advertising products or services that they sold was the banner ad, the very tiny banner ad on your iPhone. Right. We're not talking about an entire screen.
No.
I would argue that the entire screen of your iPhone is large enough to include the FEC or the FARA disclaimer, okay? But where you have just a small banner ad or a Google search ad that is character limited,
yeah,
or a tweet that is character limited, those are small items. As we apply the small items exemption at the Federal Election Commission, okay? And there has been a disagreement among commissioners on applying the small items exemption to those small screen items and character limited items. So I don't know that any of the advertisements that we're reading about in the newspapers today were so small that they could not have accommodated the ad. But there are ads that are so small that to post the FEC disclaimer would crowd out any message, and then the disclaimer censors the message.
Yeah, that's a very practical concern, and you could have a real free speech problem there. Now, to close out the show, I know you can't talk about matters before the commission now, but just to give a sense for the listeners, you know, whether you're a congressional staffer, a journalist, someone in the tech industry who's worried about this issue, any final thoughts to wrap up? Anything people should be looking out for? And of course, maybe depending on how things proceed at the FEC, we can have you on back again to give us that inside information.
Sure. Well, the Federal Election Commission has agreed to take public comment on disclaimers as one potential mechanism for addressing what we're reading about in the newspapers. Now, I have gone into this with clear questions that I have stated publicly about the logic of using a disclaimer mechanism to address the problem of foreign ads, because foreign ads are already illegal. And for the FEC to use disclaimers to get at foreign spending, to me, seems somewhat illogical. It's a little bit like telling the meth dealer, selling meth is illegal, but you have to have a disclaimer on it when you do sell it.
Well, that would make it okay. Yeah, definitely. Honesty is important in the drug dealing.
That would tell people,
yeah,
that, you know, meth could be harmful to your health, right? And so I've questioned whether if someone's going to try to circumvent our laws from a foreign country, whether they would provide an accurate disclaimer to begin with. They would probably want to disguise themselves anyway. So I have questioned whether adding disclaimers to ads that are already illegal is a logical enforcement mechanism. But nonetheless, we are going to receive comment on that, and I have drawn a couple of lines. The first thing I've said is I want to be informed by all the facts before I start taking regulatory actions, because I believe any regulatory response must be tailored to the actual facts and what occurred. And it's going to take us a while for the dust to settle, to get a Mueller report, for all of the facts to come out from the 2016 election. The second thing I've said is I will not unnecessarily regulate or restrict the civil liberties and free speech rights of American citizens out of frustration at getting at a trickle of foreign-funded ads on social media platforms, given the broader context of the World Wide Web and how ubiquitous information is on the World Wide Web. I think that's going after a capillary. And so, I think it's very important that we remain mindful of the social goods that come from free speech on the internet by American citizens, and that we not diminish those. The empowerment of the American people and the vast majority of uses of social media platforms and other online communication media has just been tremendous, right? That in empowering American citizens to associate, to bond. And so the social good that comes on these new technologies must be weighed against the efforts to address what may be a small concern in the broader context.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. If you like listening to Commissioner Goodman as much as I do, we have two other podcasts that he recorded with us a little while ago that explore many of the same issues in actually even more detail. So if you want to listen to those, I strongly encourage you to. Also, for an opposing viewpoint, I will link to the Commissioner Ravel op-ed so you can kind of see what we're talking about here and how the different sides approach the issue. But otherwise, follow us on Twitter. Commissioner, thank you for joining the show again.
Evan, thank you for having me.
Welcome back anytime. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook, where you can still post about our podcast because you haven't been regulated yet. Write a review in the iTunes store, where we always appreciate getting your feedback. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. And of course, we will see you next time.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.